The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Welcome back. I am Molly Smith, your host. I want to remind you all that our program is available for download. You can do so by going to our website, fromthemedian.org.
Hi, everybody. This is Jerry Serino, Jr. I have to make a note of that, as hopefully many of you who have been listening to Molly Smith's podcast, From the Median, I am coming on periodically to do some shows with her and on my own. And I'm really, really excited to be a part of this, her great podcast. Molly Smith, of course, is a huge, huge champion. She's a legend in the pro-life movement, especially here in Cleveland and in Ohio. So I'm really honored to be doing this with her. And hopefully I can do as well of a job as her. My voice might not be as great as hers. All of you who listen know her wonderful South African voice. It's really intriguing and we love it. But anyways, my first guest here as the solo host for From the Median is Allison Centofante. Allison has been on my personal podcast a couple times. She is a great, great pro-life champion, and she's doing really great stuff. And I wanted to bring her on to talk about all that she's doing and get some of her thoughts on what's going on in the pro-life movement. So Allison, thank you for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited, and I'm excited for this new development too with all you're up to. So congrats.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I know you're doing a lot of great stuff too. So let's maybe start with that. So actually a handful of things. So we have some time to talk about you in general and all that you're doing. You have Centofante Strategies. So maybe start with that. Tell us what that is all about.
Sure. I'd love to. So we have a really powerful message in the pro-life movement, the pro-family movement, and we just have to have really powerful messengers to get it out there. I think we can all agree that the power of a good messenger, we've seen state races, we've seen ourselves falling into, I really like them and I want to vote for them. They're just likable. And that's something I'm working on with a lot of pro-life groups, is the message we're getting out there, training messengers in media, how to make our great fight for life, I think, winsome and likable, understandable. You know, the more pro-choice people I meet, they've just never had it explained to them in a kind and thoughtful way. So Centofante Strategies, I started when I started growing my family as a way to consult leaders. And I've worked with homeschool groups and pro-life groups, pro-liberty groups. That's where my heart and passion lies. And I'm helping some groups right now that are doing sidewalk advocacy. So they're praying outside of abortion clinics. That's a huge thing. I'm on the board of a group that is shutting down abortion clinics called Center for Client Safety, who I love. And they are shutting down clinics by just following through with the complaints that the patients themselves report. But they don't know how to file the right paperwork, and we do, so we can shut down a clinic. But I'm finding myself getting involved in things that I think matter. You're the same way. I can't say no to like a justice issue. I moved recently from Washington, D.C. down south and with my husband, and we are starting to see down here some of these like same issues with library books and the ideology and getting ahead of protecting your children's innocence. So I have a really big heart for kids, really big heart for women, and that's kind of what drives my work.
Yeah, great stuff. So last time you were on my show, you had a baby on your lap, and I think if I'm correct, I think you are expecting another baby. Uh-huh. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I can't see you, so no one could accuse
me.
Of-
I know. No, I am seven months pregnant. I'm 7 months pregnant with my third little girl. So whoever's out there making boys, I can't wait to meet you, because we'll need good Christian, God-fearing boys in our lives eventually. But for now, we're just working on the girls.
That's awesome. I have 7 boys and 1 girl.
Oh my goodness.
My kids are older. So boys are being made out there. It just depends.
So you had 7 awesome. Boys. You had 6 boys and then 1 girl?
No,
or
we
7
had
boys and a girl.
3 boys, a girl, and then 4 okay. boys.
Got it.
So
okay.
3, 1, and 4. Yeah, there's a lot of testosterone in my house. My wife is always says she needed more daughters.
She can come over here. We've got all the pink, all the girls. Stuff. Yeah. Congrats. She's a saint.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. She is. Yeah. So, okay. So obviously you have a passion for life. So I was looking at your website that you have, and it's a really good one, by the way, so people could go there, since you do talks and you do a lot of things. So people who are in this life movement for us. And as you mentioned, it's beyond the abortion issue. Obviously that's the biggest and most important issue, certainly. But you were talking about books, and you're talking about, you know, we have all this transgender stuff and what's happening to kids. But I want to go back to when I was reading how you got into this movement. You had brought Jane Roe, Norma McCorvey, into, was it your high school? Tell me that
college,
story.
And kind of,
was it college?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I went to Liberty University down in Virginia. And a group of us decided to do like a pro-life week. And we invited Norma McCorvey, who was Jane Roe of Roe v. Wade, down to speak. She shared an amazing story, Jerry. Many know her story, but obviously she found herself pregnant and was, you know, seen as this poster child. These exploitative lawyers used her story of not being able to get an abortion in Texas to take her case to the Supreme Court. And when Roe v. Wade was decided, you know, the fate of 60 million children would be impacted. Well, Norma, Jane Roe, never had an abortion. She placed her child for adoption and later in life actually became pro-life. So she was traveling, speaking and sharing her story. And it really moved me to see that, you know, God can change anyone. She chose life, which was great. You know, she didn't have the regret of her own abortion, but she did talk openly about the regret of what her case led to, and how she was used. And so that was moving for me as a college student. I went home, and my own dad shared with me, you know, with tears in his eyes about, you know, he said, "Allie, I forgot about this until you started doing this work. But before I was saved, I was dating a young woman and she got pregnant, and we went to the facility." And he said, "I need you to know, they said this is a clump of cells. That's literally what they told us. And that's how we made the decision." And, you know, I'm the oldest of 3 girls. He's crying. I'm crying. I just saw it in his heart, and his conscience was seared too. And so he said, I confess to the Lord. I confess to your mom. And I called this woman. I found her number, called her to apologize. And thankfully she'd had a family and all of that. I don't think she really wanted to hear from him, but it was right for him to call and apologize. Mm-hmm. And so I think they just started realizing, like, okay, this is really close to home. This is affecting women and men. This is bigger than I thought. And so I moved to Washington, D.C. my senior year. I worked at Fox News, worked at Christian nonprofits. And that's just how I got my start in working, I think, in what's the greatest human rights issue of our time, that I prayed this morning for an end to abortion. I try and do that in front of my children. You know, I pray for an end to abortion. Like, I want that. And I'm grateful for the things the Lord put in my life, and like the people who are speaking out. Those voices are really, really important.
Most definitely. So, so some of the things that we were talking off the air is you're headed to Michigan this weekend. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So a lot of churches, which is great, are getting more involved and realizing, hey, we've got to equip like our young people. And I'm an evangelical at heart. I did youth group. You know, my dad was a youth pastor. My mom, we still do ministry all together. And I say to our pastors, like, if you're not talking to your teens and your preteens about sex and abortion, you've lost them. Like, that is the chance. I mean, you can think back, you remember, like, when we were 15, someone's like, let me talk to you about sex. You're like, okay, like, what? It's just there for them. And they're dealing with so many more, so much more temptation online and misinformation. So I've really tried to encourage churches to get involved and to not be afraid of talking about this. So there's a group in Michigan that's hosting a couple speakers, and I'll be going out there this weekend to talk and share some. I think I'm going to share some Instagram reels and how I would respond to them. But I encourage everyone, if you're involved in a church, push your pastors, push your youth pastors to bring in a pro-life speaker. Obviously get educated themselves, but if you feel unprepared, there are those who have dedicated their lives to making this message make sense, to making sure we know every hard case and how to respond. We've answered every hard question, you know, like, it's out there. So I think we just as Christians need to make sure we're making sure, yes, we're pro-life, but two things: making sure our children understand what that means, and then also that we're a safe space for if and when that unplanned pregnancy happens, that they come to us first. I just met with, I'm here in Huntsville, Alabama. I'm speaking at their Pregnancy Resource Center next week, and I've been meeting with them. And I said, what's the demographic? How has it changed since Roe v. Wade's overturned? And they were saying they felt like they used to see, you know, a lot of like non-church girls, women. But now, because abortion's been restricted in the state of Alabama, they're seeing everybody. So a lot more like, hey, my mom can never find out about this. I've been in church my whole life. They are Christian, and stats support that, Jerry. 4 out of 10 women who had an abortion said that they were in church the month prior. So that's 40% of women who had an abortion said they were in some sort of church service the month earlier. So this is not an out there thing. This is inside. And we, and I'm convicted of this myself in the work I do, need to do everything we can that our kids and our kids' friends know that we are the one that can connect them to resources and support them. Even if you think your parents are going to kill you, we lower that bar and like, hey, I'm going to be with you. We're going to talk them through this. This is their grandkid. That's how we have to frame this. We're not going to kill their grandkid. We're not going to kill your kid. You know, like, and so just kind of lowering the freak out moment. And of course we want everyone to get married before they have sex. I'd say that to your 7 boys and my 3 girls. But when that ideal isn't hit, that our children are not then putting themselves in front of an abortion facility, inside an abortion facility alone, that they know to come to us, and all the life-affirming options and support they can get from us.
Yeah. Yeah, really right on. I mean, right on. I want to ask you your thoughts on a couple things. One is which something I've been thinking about a lot lately, and that is what is really now at this point at the heart of the issue of abortion. And what I mean is when you said that your dad went and was told it's a clump of cells, you know, the whole fraud of Roe v. Wade and the like, and people were told baby doesn't feel pain, it's not a real, all that, all those lies, those are, no one could deny that those are lies anymore. No one could deny the realities that the baby feels pain, it is alive, it is living, it's human, and so on. All of those lies have been debunked completely. It's right in front of you. For me, I almost feel like we're at the point where, yeah, maybe you could see people that took the pro-choice side of things because they were given wrong information, right? Or they were lied to, mm-hmm. and they still are. But now I feel like it's not so much that, it's a pride issue. It's those that are on the left, they're Democrats, they're diehard Democrats, they feel like they have to go along with their party, or they've been pro-abortion their whole life and suddenly they're seeing, you know, the truth out there. But pride is in their way. And what do you think about that? Am I off base or?
Yeah, no, I think that's really wise. I think that's really wise, Jerry. I think it's two things. I think it's pride, because I think the more I've talked to people who have participated in an abortion, men and women, there is a desire to justify that act. It is really hard to face it. It's really hard. And so those who do face it and say, what I did was wrong, and I want to make sure no one else does that, are some of the strongest people in the world. Like, think about that. Like, think about your deepest and darkest sin, and you're going to talk about it openly. That's hard. So I think a lot of it is pride in that way. Like, it's a selfishness. I don't want to admit that I did something wrong, and I don't want to humble myself and warn others. So there's a stake in the ground of, I must justify this. I must protect this practice. Because if I have, the only other option is to say that what I did was wrong and that it's foolishness to continue in this way, right? So that's huge. And we're all human, and pride and ego is very big. And so you're right. I think the other side of it, the dark side of it, is profit that drives that pride. And so politicians particularly who take money from the abortion industry in any way. So, and I mean, Planned Parenthood and other abortion groups, healthcare groups, research groups, all funding pro-abortion politicians, there's money involved. And just like in anything in life, follow the money. And the Bible is clear. It is not money. Money is not the root of all evil. It is the love of money that is the root of evil. And so I think it's a combination where I must justify my actions or those who I know. And I also now have found a lot of friends that will pay me to continue to advocate for abortion. And it could be as simple as, and maybe you're not a politician, maybe you're just a very pro-choice, pro-abortion, staunch Democrat. I think that there is profit to be made because it is bucking the system to be against abortion. So you're going to get questioned. You might lose friends. You might lose family. And that's the reality of it. Pro-lifers don't make any money when a woman chooses life. In fact, we're often the ones sacrificing time, talent, treasure to support her. We're building her homes. We're getting her everything she needs. We're helping her husband through parenting classes. The other side makes money. And so I always want to bring that up too.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. You're absolutely right. 100%. It is about the money. And I often wonder, you know, to your point about, you know, pride of justifying it, you know, could you imagine what it would take for a Joe Biden to say, you know what, I was wrong. Right. What that would do to someone like him or people, other people in politics, when it does happen on a limited basis, usually by not by high level, you know, politicians like him, but they end up just getting destroyed Democrat comes out.
But, you know, he claims to be Catholic. So you think, OK, maybe we're not that far off. But, you know, he's absolutely pro-abortion and he's very much targeting pro-lifers. And he's I do want to say, I think a little bit of it's fear, Jerry, as a woman, we have been told for so long, and I sense this even in my marriage and being open to starting a family. I'm like, where are all these voices in my head that are telling me your life is over? Say goodbye to your dreams. Say goodbye to your career. Say goodbye to your fun life. Like, it's because for 25 years of my life, every magazine, every commercial, every birth control ad said, don't have a baby. You better not get pregnant. It's this fear. And it's very palpable. Even if you're in an amazing, you know, Christian marriage of like, I'm scared. What does this mean? It is really the great unknown. And I know your family has walked through that. But I have great Christian girls, friends that are married and like scared to death because it's osmosis, peer pressure that we've sensed. And I think on the left, it's almost a Bible truth that they feel a woman cannot be successful with children, that we must have the same right, so-called right, to be carefree, casual about sex that men have, because we need to be equal to men and we need to be able to abandon our responsibilities. We need to be able to leave, neglect, and keep climbing the ladder. And I remember when I first got to DC, actually, I asked this amazing matriarch of the movement. She was like 60 years old. She had lived through, you know, the multiple movements of feminism. She's lived through, you know, Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem and Hillary Clinton. I said, why is this such a strong issue for women on the left? And she said, because they have no idea how it would feel to not have this parachute. Abortion is a parachute in the sense that you hope you never have to use it, but if you get pregnant, you have that option to end the life of your child and continue on your life. And I thought, wow, that's so interesting. Like they would say in some way, oh, I don't really want to have it. I don't want to have an abortion, but if I had to, I want it there. And it's a level playing, it creates a more level playing field in their mind. So when you asked me about like what's driving it, I just want to point that out, that I think it's decades of propaganda. We've been told as women that we can't succeed with children, with family, and that our womanhood is only as important as if we can reflect the success of a biological man in the workplace. And that's gross. It really is. Like that's so like anti-feminine, anti-woman. And I'm encouraged because I see a lot of young women waking up. I see Christian women and also non-Christian women just kind of bucking the system and being like, why are you putting me on birth control at 15 for the next 15 years? So I can't get pregnant when I want to, once I'm married. And why are you pushing me so hard? I'm not made to work like a bulldog all through the night for some boss that doesn't care about me. Like I have girlfriends, Jerry, that are 32, 34, 35 now, single, because they followed that. And they thought that might bring them joy and happiness. And now at 35, people are saying, well, why aren't you married? It's like, society does not honor them. You guys never told, you know what I mean? Like you pushed me into the workforce in a hard way. And you struck down my femininity. You told me to dress like a man, act like a man, talk like a man, be like a man. So it's there's some awakening that's happening. I will say it's very encouraging to me for women to go, no, I want to have kids. This is the most rebellious, revolutionary thing. And I'm going to do it.
So on top of all that you said, which was really, really, really great, very, very profound, where women are told to act like men, we're now dealing with women who want to be men or men who want to be women. As an adult, obviously I have I think it's a mental illness and they need to be offered help, but they're an adult. They could, if a man wants to wear a dress and walk around in a dress, I can't stop them and I don't really want to, other than saying, hey, they need help. But there is an attack obviously on children to where they, the left, the people that are on this side are now seeking to chop off body parts. At the Cleveland Right to Life event, we had in early March, we had Chloe Cole there that spoke, and she's a detransitioner. She spoke about it, and we're seeing a lot out there about the severe damage. But it looks to me, and I've explained this to people, it looks to me that this transgender movement is following the same path as abortion, as what you were talking about with how women were told to, essentially ignore their femininity. It's all based on lies, right? We're told that children need to be able to have transition surgery. It's good for them. It's going to help them. It's going to save them. They won't commit suicide if you allow them to chop off their body parts and so on. Mm-hmm. And they continue with it. I mean, is the whole transgender thing, do you think, almost like the new battle here with it? And second question is, as a Christian person, it seems as though life is under attack at every level.
Yeah.
Or would you agree?
Great question, Jerry. Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking of two things. I'm thinking of a friend, Joel Rosenberg, who is a Christian living in Israel. He travels and does a lot of great work talking about revelations and Jesus' return. And obviously he's living in Israel, so he's dealing with a lot. And he said something during one of his remarks. He said, I'm traveling the nation talking about revelations and America is still stuck in Genesis 1. What is a man? What is a woman? And is there a God? And I was like, you're so right. He's like, I'm trying to bring, America and Christians globally to understand end times. And you're in Genesis 1. What is a man? What is a woman? And so that was profound to me. I also think your question just makes me think, okay, what was the church doing in 1974 in response to the legalization of abortion? What should they have been doing? We should probably be asking the same question now. as we have legalized the mutilation of children and we have legalized the, I think, profitable exploitation of gender dysmorphia. What is the American church, Big C, doing? Or how are we equipping adults and kids to face this? And so, because it does feel very new, like you said, and it does feel like it's following a trend of normalization. Don't say it's bizarre. Don't say it's inappropriate. You know, just hush, hush. Hope it doesn't affect me. And then it will. And I've seen that in my extended family, and I'm sure you've seen it in your networks. Like, we all can probably think of someone that a child's innocence has been lost to this ideology, and a parent has felt underprepared, and family members don't know what to do. And it's really heartbreaking. So for me, I've just, you know, what my friends and I are talking about, and leaders are talking about, is kind of opening your eyes to the trifecta that has been created that targets innocence of children. And in some ways, to relate it back to the abortion issue, I've thought about this a lot. Like, it feels like if they can't get to your kids in the womb, and they will try and get to them when they're born, by confusing them. And right. Like, whether that's through like early sexualization and exposing them to things online or library story hours, the transgender movement has leaders out there saying, we'll be your family. Like, we will love on you and you can come to us, and replacing your role as a mom and a dad. And so, people are like, why is it so weird? I'm like, well, look up the National Library Association, look up the National Education Association, go do your reading. There's great books out there. You know, Bethany Bandel and Carol Mirzarski did a great book. Abigail Schreier, there's a lot out there. So we just need to prepare ourselves for it. And I will say, because I know you're a believer and I am as well, we have to be prepared to receive these children. In the same way, we're much better about receiving as believers post-abortive women, right? And we show them compassion and we pursue healing and we show them how God can use their story. In the same way, we need to be ready and hopeful that when people wake up and detransition, that we receive them well. They're now working out stuff. And I've talked to pastors who are like, how do I counsel someone who was born a girl, wanted to display like a boy, but now is going back, but has taken hormones that affected their body at a level that they're not attractive to the opposite sex anymore. They might never get married. This is what our, you know, we're working through. So yeah, I would just say do a lot of reading, talk openly, you know, with your kids about confusion, and that there is truth. And there's like so much freedom in knowing the truth about yourself. And do what you have to do to protect your kids' innocence. Pull them out of school, change their friend group, you know, whatever that may be. It's worth it for them. It really is. It's a different world than we grew up in.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to echo your sentiments on the church. You know, we just had in Ohio an amendment that failed, or actually I should say it passed, that established abortion in the Ohio Constitution. And when you look at some of the numbers, we as Christians could have easily defeated that. Easily. So in a lot of ways, I blame, sadly, other Christians. I'm Catholic, and we had a transgender policy put forward by our bishop here in Cleveland, a very good one, and the biggest pushback he got was from other Catholics, including Catholic schools, right? People in Catholic schools, including leaders in these Catholic schools. So it's really sad to me, and it's like we basically are fighting, our greatest enemy is in our own home, in a sense, in our own houses, and the people we associate with. We could defeat this, all this stuff, if believers truly came together and voted and acted as we should, because what's being attacked is everything that is good. Life, gender, you know, masculinity, femininity, everything that's sinful, horribly sinful and so detrimental to the human being is being promoted as good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's so important to push back against it. And I know we're all busy, you know, we're teachers and leaders and moms and dads. So I just say, like, look, there are people out there that are fighting the good fight and you just need to support them. And, you know, when I was working for all these nonprofits, I didn't donate because I was donating my time. I was working really hard for not much, you know, right? But now I want to give back. And so I look at who can I donate to, like these groups, you know, Sidewalk Advocates for Life I'm working with. They have peaceful, prayerful volunteers that are reaching women every day and changing their mind on abortion. And I want my money to go there. I'm not going to do that. I can't stand out 7 months pregnant with two toddlers like every Saturday, but they are. So I want to support that. There's groups that are shutting down clinics, like Center for Client Safety. There's like whatever you feel like, oh man, I wish I could do more of that. Like honor that, pray for them. And I really say get involved, donate them, donate to them and support them with your prayers and your finances. And I do feel like it makes a difference, and it makes a difference in you feeling like you're a part of the good fight as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. And great place to end, Allison. Thank you so much for coming on From the Median here. We're very grateful and appreciative of all that you're doing. Keep it up.
And thanks as well.
Best of luck with girl number three. and it's going to be a handful of years when you're going to enjoy it, but then when they become teenagers, it's a whole different story. But,
as long as they know they're girls, I feel like we'll be okay.
Yeah, that's my goal. It's a win if they continue as girls their whole life, right? It's a win for you guys.
That's our low bar we're setting right now. But yeah, thank you, Jerry, and good luck for all you're doing. And we're praying for just the pro-life movement up there. And it takes all of us doing our part to really make a difference. So thank you.
Yes, excellent. Thanks so much, Allison. Appreciate it.
Thank you all for joining me this evening. As I say goodnight and God bless each and every one of you, I'd like to close with the words of the Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel. There may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we fail to protest.
From the Median is listener supported. Visit our website, fromthemedian.org, for further information or to make a donation to continue to make this radio program possible. Email us, radionews@fromthemedian.org, or call 440-668-4049. Through our fromthemedian.org website, you can download this or previous programs for your listening pleasure, or sign up to receive our weekly preview of upcoming guest interviews. Tune in every weeknight at the same time to listen to another great interview on From the Median as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life.
This program has been sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.